Welcome, episode 2F07, Grandpa versus Sexual Inadequacy. Original air date, December 4th, 1994. I'm Wes Archer. I directed this episode.
I'm Josh Weinstein, one of the writers.
Bill Oakley, the other writer.
David Merkin, executive producer and showrunner. This, obviously, a reference to our beloved or maybe hated Hanna-Barbera cartoons that just put people's hands in weird positions and have endless recycling of the same background again and again, something we never do in The Simpsons except to make fun of, by the way.
Okay, this movie is not a Cheech and Chong movie, despite what everybody thought on the internet.
Well, inside, it's Cheech and Chong. Outside, it's What's Up, Doc?
It's like that. It's all. There's a huge number of crummy early 70s movies, a lot of them that take place in San Francisco and involve heists. But that's, yes, they often would be on late at night.
Yes. The What's Up, Doc? Great movie.
Yes, that's right.
Great movie. Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah.
And these wide shots, I think Wes will agree with me, you know, when we're outside, isn't that very What's Up, Doc-ish? Is that where you're getting that? Or?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I mean, there are probably some Clint Eastwood movies that did it, too. But the Volkswagen, I think they were in a Volkswagen and they go into the bay. So it's very, very similar.
Now, this episode deals with a topic that...
Right. If you're watching this with your kids and listening to the commentary like we know kids love to hear, this is an R-rated episode, really. I can't believe, in retrospect, that they let us put this on the air.
Well, you know, that was about as nude as Marge ever was.
And a very nice drawing of Marge. She's
got a killer body. I mean, Marge, you know, her face is not, and the blue hair might be scary, you know. But her body is a stunning body. Anytime we kind of get her nude or into something clingy, she's very curvy, and it looks like
there's an interesting
fun
shot coming up.
Homer, wake up, wake up.
Yeah, actually, I got a cell from one of those scenes.
Did you?
That's a nice
cell that we'll be talking
about.
Look
at that. That's pretty sexy there.
Homer
is amazing.
Homer
looks good.
Well, the idea was to deal in a sort of mature... This is not an episode for kids, as we said. It was to deal in a mature way, to some extent, with their sex life, Homer and Marge's sex life, and then it got off onto this tangent about the
relationship between Homer and Grandpa.
Right, right. It actually was sort of an unwieldy melding of two different topics that are both relationship oriented and spring from sex, but
sex and patent medicine.
Yes,
sort of goes.
Yeah, we kind of dropped the whole Marge Homer sex problem. I guess it gets solved by the elixir, and then we're sort of on to the problem between Homer and his grandfather.
Structurally, it's not like our normal thing. It's sort of like two halves.
And it follows in the tradition of, I like that joke. It follows in the tradition of Bill and Josh enjoying writing about old people, having a lot of old references.
Even when
timing.
It's about sex, we've got to turn it into old people and medicine.
Yeah. That's the way you balance it. It's about sex in the beginning, and then it's about an old-timey elixir for the rest of the time. And also, this episode, it's interesting because this is a pre-Viagra episode.
That's right.
A pre-Cialis episode, and it basically is about exactly that. So...
Yeah, it was the stuff
the
of fantasy when we made it.
That's right. That's
there was
right.
No such thing as an aphrodisiac. Also, that's the first and only time in my mind that Peter Ueberroth has been mentioned on a hit comedy show, and I think he owes us a call or something.
But since then, he's mentioned on almost every hit comedy show.
Yeah, he's become sort of a cliche, the Peter Ueberroth joke.
Yeah, the world, according to Jim, has done so many of those jokes. This, of course, is the X-Files. There was an entire Simpsons episode done... that parodied the X-Files with David Duchovny on it and everything. But this was a little mini one, and Alf did a great job on creating that music. And that's a perfect Al Gore, and the reason Al Gore didn't win, all just in a little 10-second bit.
Scene Planning, Sensible Tomorrow was his book. Paul Harvey, this is one of my favorite things that Harry does, is his Paul Harvey impression.
It's a brilliant impression of Paul Harvey. And I think, to give you guys credit, a brilliant juxtaposition of Paul Harvey talking about sex. There probably couldn't be anything more disturbing on earth, and it came out perfectly.
The end of this act actually is largely about how unpleasant it is when old people talk about sex.
He looked so angry, and I've almost never seen him look so angry and annoyed. It was really quite disturbing.
There was actually a lot of physical comedy opportunity with Homer throughout the episode.
This is somewhat based on the Madonna Inn,
yes,
which is
San Luis Obispo.
Near San Luis Obispo, near the ocean there, that has all these kind of crazy rooms that are supposed to kind of spice up your love life, like a cave room and an opera room and all these kind of things. It's also a disturbing place.
A utility room.
This isn't very ironic. I think it's an actual utility room.
No, honey. It's a romantic fantasy.
I remember there was a lengthy debate between Josh and myself about which room this was going to be. I think utility room was the right decision, but there was also a discussion of having it be like an S&M room. which was just termed was too lewd. This already was kind of a raunchy episode, and it was very lewd. Homer was going to be wearing like a leather outfit and stuff, and we thought better of it.
I like
it
the utility room. Wow,
it was better as a utility room. That was a good decision, because I don't think the S&M room would have survived one way or the other. I like how frustrated they both look there. It's good job on that, Wes. Good acting. And then this is something you can only do in a cartoon: is run your car over that quickly back and forth. That's one of the great things about animation. You can do timings that are actually impossible in the real world, but look completely believable in animation.
Ultra-microscopic silico volcanic coniosis!
That's the longest disease in the world.
It's a real disease based on inhaling volcanic ash, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, this again, is as we have a lot in The Simpsons, this is a big episode between Homer and his father, and it's basically Dan Castellaneta talking to himself. And again, it's just stunning to me that one person can do two completely different voices, and it's the same guy, but yet you would never know, putting these voices this close together, you can't tell it's the same person, and that's very, very impressive. It's also hard for Dan to do this voice for a long time, because Grandpa's voice is kind of wheezy and airy and stuff, so these are always a challenge, just like when Julie Kavner has to do an episode where she plays Patty and Selma, and sometimes even her mother, it completely blows her voice out because it's so gravelly for such a long time.
I'm surprised that Krusty doesn't do that to Dan. It seems like just doing that impression of Krusty for about 30 seconds makes
blows your voice out, yeah. But no, Dan has an amazingly powerful voice. He really is good at that. You know, and again, in addition to the voices being different, there's just great acting here. I direct the actors in all these shows, and it's just a pleasure. I mean, because they just are so good. No matter how well we write something, the actors always make it sound better than it sounded in your head. And that's what you're always looking for with great actors and great performers. They really improve things. And I read that the train going into the tunnel, that the first time that was used is by Hitchcock. Now, this is a cheat, this joke, to have the name of the stock footage festival on the inside of the theater. Because we had to do a direct cut to the thing. We couldn't have the you would normally cut to the marquee of the theater that would say that.
The two cuts ruins the joke.
Exactly. So it was a great cheat that worked.
If you're not familiar with filmmaking cliches, by the way, a train entering a tunnel, a rocket blasting off are usually imply that sex is taking place off camera at that moment. Also, the hot dogs going down the assembly line was our own invention.
That was a brand new one that has now entered the lexicon of sexy imagery.
Now, Marge is talking about Paul Anka and Rex Harrison, which again reminds me that even throughout the 90s, we were writing Marge like she was a parent in 1966. She was basically the parents of all the people who were writing.
I always took it as that Marge just had really, really old style
taste. That's true.
And just, you know, was like stuck in this time, and she thought that was good entertainment and such. You know, it's funny, you know, they don't really like, it's true of Homer too, they don't necessarily like the people they should like for their age. They're yes. kind of wrong.
Homer is slightly younger than us now, technically.
It's true. The aging of The Simpsons, I know it's been discussed, is like a Twilight Zone episode where everyone is stuck in this particular time. So every time we flash back to Homer and Marge and we are assuming their relationship courting was in the 70s, that doesn't work anymore because that makes them like in their 50s or something.
Right. But Homer's 38.
And Homer's perpetually 38. So The Simpsons gets weirder and weirder the longer it goes on.
Homer was 36, I think, until season 6 or 7 where we decided it was just too much.
He aged two years. Yeah, that was our nod. I think that's the first time we ever did Buddy Love, after ripping off Jerry Lewis all the time, who eventually did the show as Frink's father. But he was basically doing Jerry Lewis, and then he got to do the other side of Jerry Lewis's Buddy Love in the original Nutty Professor. And I was amazed hearing this just the other day about how great his Buddy Love was. You know, he does an amazing, crazy idiot, Jerry Lewis, but his Buddy Love, Hank Azaria's Buddy Love, right on the money.
Yep, yep.
Nonetheless,
this was the last time that we saw Milhouse's parents happy together.
Yes.
It makes me a little sad because only about 12 episodes later, they had a horrible falling out and got divorced.
Just like real life.
Also, I've never seen Dr. Hibbert's wife be so sexy before. Or since.
And we could pretend this is an homage to the Star Trek episode, the original Star Trek episode, Miri, but it's not. But it sort of works as it anyway. I love what's going on with Ralph in the background there, just standing and staring at a wall.
He's looking for someone to cook his dinner, but
yes,
he's looking in the wall.
He looks at the wall for a while. Then finally, it takes him this long to realize that these kids are even there. Ralph's brain does not work very quickly.
Hurry up! We got a lot of tonic to sell and a lot of towns to visit. Frigid Falls, Mount Seldom, Lake Placid.
Great.
Sex jokes, sex jokes, sex jokes.
Yes.
Or actually, lack of sex joke.
Along with Bart's generation. Now as for your generation. And for the minimal outlay of $1, you can take home a bottle of liquid lithium.
Bart's obsession with UFOs is drawn from, I think, our observation that a lot of kids around that age start to go through this thing where they become susceptible to a lot of shysters selling them books about UFOs and paranormal phenomenon and so forth. And I went through that stage, certainly.
If you can steer your kids' conversations towards aliens and away from sex.
Right. I don't know how much time I spent trying to move a salt shaker with my mind, but after that I was really mad at the author of that book that it didn't work.
Yeah, there is a period that you go through, an adolescent period, where everything seems like it's a conspiracy. Everything seems hidden. And it just seems that all these weird things are going on underground. And then they most likely are, by the way. In fact, I can guarantee they are. But we just get too busy with other things to care anymore.
Right. Most people just don't have the time and patience to learn how to move a salt shaker with their mind.
That's right. And that, by the way, I believe that was the actual Flatt & Scruggs recording, the original 78 Flatt & Scruggs recording of Foggy Mountain Breakdown, which was used in the movie Bonnie and Clyde, the actual recording from the 78 version of that record for the chase scenes in Bonnie and Clyde. It became a big hit and a big sensation when Bonnie and Clyde came out, and we, of course, revived it and failed to make it a new sensation.
Okay, so between that time, it became a big...
A
it was
joke.
The chase. It was the chase music.
Right.
Ne plus ultra.
Flatt & Scruggs, by the way, they're the ones that did the exciting theme for the Beverly Hillbillies. They're playing the banjo and the guitar and that. They're not singing. That's somebody else is actually singing, but that was also their big claim to fame. Earl Scruggs, probably the greatest five-string banjo player in history, and just a wonderful, wonderful, lovely guy. And I know that many people buy these DVDs. We're hoping there'd be lots of talk about banjos.
Now is where we start to sort of abandon the other story and take up this other story.
And this design really is completely out of the Meg Ryan, Dennis Quaid movie, Flesh and Bone.
Let's go find that hot dog tree I planted. Yeah, we lived here till the bank foreclosed in 63. Farm went bust after the cows started giving sour milk. Something must have spooked them good.
And Earl Scruggs.
I like the way Homer was torturing the cows there. I was thinking, though, the other day that he should have had a pail or some sort of noise making to even terrify them further. And this is very well done. And very satisfying. Homer has the perfect laugh that you want something to happen to the person when they laugh like that. He's got a perfect nasty laugh. Particularly the old TVs used to put out huge amounts of radiation, and that's why this happens with the shadow behind Homer. And it also maybe is an explanation, among other explanations we've given over the years, why Homer doesn't think so well.
president someday.
Now, it looks like Abe's going to hit him. He rolls up the paper, but then he never does hit him.
Didn't we have him hit him at the animatic phase, and then we... He might have actually hit him early on.
I think he might have, and then we decided it was too nasty. And,
yeah. Or it might have been written that way, but... Think of the original storyboards or something, he hit him.
I like that we worry about, you know, Homer getting hit on the head with a newspaper when his basic move is to strangle young children.
Yeah.
We play on this a little bit later, but it's just amazing because I always found it disturbing, actually, of all the violence on The Simpsons, the actual strangling here, because the people's eyes go wall and everything, and they make a lot of choking sounds, but they're fine. It doesn't really bother them that much as soon as it ends. So that's why we do it again and again.
I've never been born and I'd have been happy. You were an accident.
Well, it was always such a joy to listen to the cassette and hear the voices at the animation studio before we started the episode.
I think I've talked about it before, and it's been talked about, but this is a new set of DVDs. I direct the actors. It's the greatest thing because you're having a great time with the actors. But we'll do about 5 to 8 takes of each line, and then you get to edit. All these things over about 4 or 5 days, about 3 or 4 hours a day. You sit and you make a soundtrack to send to Wes or one of our directors. And you really have so much control compared to directing live action, where you can combine sentences, you can move a word from one reading into another sentence somewhere, and it's just a control freak's dream, basically, directing this show. And there's very little that you have to do because the actors are already so amazing, but you can even perfect it even more and create even better timing and connections by just doing all this editing, and it's a blast to do that. It really is.
Vampires are forcing our parents to go to bed early in a fiendish plot.
And I had this exact thing as a kid. We formed clubs, and we would take. I mean, it wasn't a real club, but we would take whatever had happened, and we saw. I saw this blue car that keeps coming down the street, and I think he's casing the place, or I think he's an evil guy. You know, we would make up things and get incredibly excited about it, and actually go on stakeouts. And if we thought like a neighbor was weird or something, we would like write down what they were doing. It probably drove them absolutely insane. But yeah, that's definitely the way you think at that age.
And to speech to your ears on this tantalizing testimonial from my own flesh and blood, the son who puts the fun in Simpson and Son, my son, Bernie!
I used to be a fat, disgusting slob!
That medicine seems to be giving your son a lot of gas.
I assure you, his belching is the result of an unrelated alcohol problem.
Unrelated alcohol problem. Barney is a great voice, and it's also done by Dan.
Sing without Homer. He knew how to drive a car.
Son, my dear son, from now on I'm going to be a good and attentive father. And for starters, your old man is going to teach you how to ride your very first bike.
And here we basically show that Homer as an attentive parent is actually a lot more disturbing than not being an attentive parent. You know, he's somebody that you don't want a lot of attention from. You know, you're going to be better off if he's...
I just remembered what the point of this episode was. It was supposed to be about Grandpa. Yes, because it's like, I can't keep a track of it. But I think I remember now what it was. It was supposed to be about Grandpa's relationship with Homer. And the fact that this Homer's need for the tonic allows them to bond. But then it starts falling apart as we see what Grandpa did wrong when he was raising Homer.
Yes, all the problems in the relationship. They're forced to spend time together. He's always been avoiding his father. Because of the tonic, they're forced to spend time together, and all the problems from all the history of the relationship come to the surface.
That's right. I couldn't figure it out until now, but now I know. I'd like you to think you just send the Emmy over to our office.
Now that we finally figured out 10 years later what this is about, we can get those... those late Emmys, as
that's
they call
right,
them,
right,
the
right.
Posthumous Emmy.
Here's where it all started to go wrong. How am I supposed to be a good dad when I never had one myself?
It always disturbed me, too, that there's apparently a perfectly acceptable farmhouse and quite a lot of land that's just completely abandoned.
Well, that's what the Midwest is like, you know? It's like they foreclosed. Grandpa said they foreclosed on the mortgage and the bank just, you know, obviously hasn't sold it.
After 30 years, 20 years? Yeah.
Yeah, well, it probably
really
should have been
bad bank.
If this were really America, it would have been torn down and paved over by now.
Exactly. There would be a strip mall.
Or a Hardee's.
I like this observation, like father, like son, that they're both screw-ups.
Nothing but trouble. You've done all the damage you're going to do.
And their bonding is based on what screw-ups they are. Again, this is a great secret of The Simpsons, as jumbled as this episode may be, which is, you know, we always celebrate just how screwed up families are. And we say that there is no solution. We say that things are bad. They remain bad. They remain kind of unfixed. And the way we do fix them is based on more screw-ups and more connections on the fact that they both stink, instead of it being some kind of happy horse shit. Like,
well, I would say, however, it's ultimately uplifting regardless. And I think that The Simpsons, that's the brilliance of The Simpsons, is that it remains ultimately uplifting despite that.
But what is uplifting about it is we're basically saying that nothing works, everything is screwed up, many families can be a terrible, terrible, screaming mess, but that's okay.
Yes.
And so people bond to it because they, oh, instead of watching a show that's all happy-go-lucky all the time and getting everything solved, we see that these people have problems, but yet they go on. Homer Simpson is one of the most positive characters in the history of any kind of medium. Even with all these problems. And that's part of why people like this, because they see we're not shoveling this happy-go-lucky point of view. We're giving them kind of an exaggerated negative reality, but still saying ultimately the message is that's okay. Everybody's family is screwed up, or a lot of families are screwed up, and that's all right. You can still make a go of it. Things are still all right. There's still things to laugh at. There's still things to celebrate.
And I think that message is only palatable in a cartoon.
In America.
I think in live action,
in
it would
America.
Be very, yes,
yeah.
It's true.
In
France,
England,
they would eat it up.
Well, in
or England,
England,
yes.
England, they, most of the sitcoms are based on losers, are based on people who are not very good looking, and are messy and dirty and very, very dysfunctional, and yet they're still very popular. But of course, they'll only do 6 to 12 episodes. And maybe do like 5 years. They won't shove it down your throat for 17 like we like to do.